just a baby. Before I could speak, I would line up all my letter blocks alphabetically. Now it's my vocation and my passion to assign every decimal numbered shelf to every decimal numbered spine. I'm alive.
I'm hoping that you may get the gist of the name of the show. This is the Library Show, and I'm Sarah here in Raven Radio Studio. And I like to talk a little bit about libraries, just in general. I just want to express to you I've been a librarian all my life, and that libraries are treasure troves of stories and information and learning. And to me, they're probably one of the most important institutions in a civil society, because there's a real dedication. Librarians are sort of diehard dedicated to the idea of trying to provide a balanced collection so people can be informed and capable of doing their own thinking and making decisions based on good information. And which kind of transitions me, I think, nicely to my guest here in the studio. This is Brielle Schaefer. Welcome.
Hi, Sarah.
Good to have you here. And you are training as a journalist, is that fair to say?
I worked at newspapers for a really long time, and now I'm the winter news fellow here at Raven Radio, so I'm getting more audio production and on-air experience.
Oh, fun. Mm-hmm. But you come from a profession that's really dedicated to sort of seeking out the truth.
That's right.
And again, that's just, you know, well, the public library carries several different newspapers, numerous magazines online as well as in print. And so we're all about trying to get out good information that really helps people think about what's going on in town or in the world. And so enough said. That's about libraries. But you are listening to the Library Show on Raven Radio. It's kind of a place where we chat about books. And years ago when I started this show, I sort of wanted to recreate that feeling that I had in the library when somebody would come in with a big pile of books either to check out or check in. And I'd say, oh, how was that? Was that interesting? Is that what? Tell me a little bit about that. And for me, that's one of the best ways for me to find another read. So I don't know about you, Brielle. What do you think?
I agree. If someone comes up to me, or I talk to my mom or a friend who's like, this is such a good book, I loved this, and they tell me why they like it, it makes me want to read it as well. And I've kind of experienced a lot of different genres that way.
Yeah, that does. It kind of opens up, you know, your curiosity and your, because there are certain things that I will sort of not gravitate towards. But if somebody walks up to me and says, sticks a book in my face and says, you really need to read this, that will get me to look at other genres. So without further ado, I'm going to ask you, what do you have in your book bag today?
So I was thinking about some of my favorite books, and I really like reading essays. I really like nonfiction, some memoirs, but also just sort of shorter pieces that you can pick up and you can read five in a row, or you can read one and feel sort of satisfied with a little nugget of a story. So I thought about a few books that I really enjoy, and they're all essay collections. One that I was reading recently is Bad Feminist by Roxane Gay. She is a really good writer, sort of pop culture columnist. She's written for a lot of different online publications like Salon and different things like that. And she sort of really looks at the media and other culture with a really critical eye and approaches it from a different lens. But she's also not too serious. And the title of her book, Bad Feminist, is saying, you know, there's this way, this idea that people think feminists need to be, but, you know, she doesn't live up to that because, you know, maybe she likes to look pretty sometimes, right, or do different things that aren't sort of in society's ideal of feminism.
Yeah, you know, I was trying to think, hark back to that time, because I sort of came into young adulthood during some heavy feminist times with Gloria Steinem and Betty Friedan and some of those gals. And there was that sort of, going against what was considered typically female. And so you did, probably there was that pendulum of really going, you know, to, well, we need to be almost like men, or we need to dress a certain way, and a lot of, not embracing the idea of feminine or whatever that meant. So do you have any favorite essays out of that, or something you'd like to just maybe read so we get a sense of what her writing is like?
Yes, I actually just sort of... I sort of marked a couple different places. In that vein, this essay is actually called A Bad Feminist, Take One, from her book of the same name. And she is talking about, different definitions of feminism. She says, as Judith Butler writes in her 1988 essay, Performative Acts and Gender Constitution, performing one's gender wrong initiates a set of punishments, both obvious and indirect, and performing it well provides the reassurance that there is an essentialism of gender identity after all. This tension, the idea that there is only one right way to be a woman, a right way to be the most essential woman, is ongoing and pervasive. We see this tension in socially dictated beauty standards. The right way to be a woman is to be thin, to wear makeup, to wear the right kind of clothes, not too slutty, not too prudish, show little leg, ladies, and so on. Good women are charming, polite, and unobtrusive. Good women work but are content to earn 77% of what men earn. Or, depending on whom you ask, good women bear children and stay home to raise those children without complaint. Good women are modest, chaste, pious, submissive. Women who don't adhere to these standards are the fallen, the undesirable. They are bad women. So she goes on to talk about how sort of performing gender, like Judith Butler says, it also applies to feminism, how there's like essential feminists and different sort of ideas of what that is.
And what do you think?
I think that feminism should be sort of I want to say loose term, but that's not correct either. I think what's exciting right now is I feel like there's a lot of sort of a mainstream feminist movement with a lot of celebrities just being like, oh yeah, I'm a feminist. And I think that that's how it should be. I think that people, men and women, who are not feminists should be ashamed of themselves. But I don't want to get too heavy here. There's also a lot of really wonderful essays in this book about the Hunger Games and other things, like sort of lighthearted, like she's critical, but it's not all, right, super political.
Right. Well, it's interesting because I just happened to see, I don't even know where I saw it because I look at so many things, but an article about women's bodybuilding, and kind of made me sit up and take a look at that. In some ways, I feel like the scope of what we're allowed to do, maybe that's not the proper word, but has enlarged for both genders, which I think is healthy and kind of shakes things up a little bit, but it widens our options. And so, enough said. What else have you got in your book bag?
I also wanted to talk about Heather Lendy. She is a writer from Haines. And I remember reading her columns in the Anchorage Daily News while I was growing up. I'm from Eagle River, and I just always loved her writing. So I've devoured all of her books, and her most recent book, Find the Good, is just so charming and wonderful. And she writes about, how she writes obituaries in Haines for the newspaper there, and how she's sort of learned all these lessons about living through writing about death.
Do you have any sort of favorite titles that you can pinpoint maybe from some of her past writings?
Oh, you mean some of her other books? Mm-hmm. She also wrote Take Good Care of the Garden and the Dogs, which was about, she was like run over by a truck and her pelvis was crushed and she had to learn how to walk and everything again. And so she wrote that book about that experience. And then she also has If You Lived Here, I'd Know Your Name. And that's also sort of about some of the experiences she's had while working for the newspaper as an obituary writer.
Okay, living in kind of a small town.
Mm-hmm.
And does she tend to be pretty positive in her writings?
She's very positive, which is, it's so lovely. She, you know, sometimes even if she gripes, she like turns it around to make it a really like warm and fuzzy story.
Oh, sounds, yeah. And she's pretty well known. I think she was actually down here maybe signing copies of her most recent book.
I would believe it.
Yeah, so she's not unfamiliar to us. Well, I'm going to sort of jump in here.
Oh, good.
I brought a little small book bag. I don't know if you've heard of Ivan Doig. Okay, well, he wrote one of my favorite books about sort of Southeast Alaska, and most specifically it's about Sitka. It's called The Sea Runners. And for those who haven't read it, I think he does a tremendous job of sort of capturing how Sitka looks and or looked and felt in the time that Russia was here. But it's the story of, I believe, four Finnish shipwrights. And I don't know if you've taken a tour of the bishop's house, but it was built by, if my understanding is correct, Finnish shipwrights, and all of the joinery and stuff is beautiful. So anyway, it's those four decide they were not slaves, I guess, I can't think of the term, but they were more or less indebted to the Russian America Company for a certain period of time, and they decided to leave Sitka. And they did it on Christmas Eve, when they knew that the Russian garrison would be partying, and they only had charts for halfway down the coast. And so it's a wonderful adventure story, but I think he does a tremendous job of capturing the environment here. So he has also is very well known for his books about Montana, and he kind of created a world, a town, and people in it. Well, this is his last novel. He passed away fairly recently, which always breaks my heart when a favorite author passes away, because it means I won't get to read anything more that they've written. But this is kind of a story about, it takes place in Gros Ventre, which was the name of the town that he had made up. And it's a wonderful story of a little 11, 12-year-old boy who's being raised by his grandmother. Nobody else in his family is left. His parents met with a great tragedy. So she has to go in for an operation. And the only thing that she can think to do with this little guy is to send him to Wisconsin to her sister, whom she hasn't seen in a long time. And to me, that's kind of an amazing trip. He has to do this by Greyhound. He's only 11 or 12 years old. But kids used to kind of do that. They would be put on a train somewhere in the Midwest and shipped out, you know, maybe to the West Coast or the East Coast. So anyway, this young lad who loves life on a ranch is sent, shipped out to his aunt, who turns out to be kind of obnoxious. So he decides to make a break for it and does get on a bus and leaves town. But as he's leaving, he's joined by Herman the German, who's married to his aunt. And it's kind of a road trip story between this young 11, 12-year-old boy and this German man, who this is takes place in the early 50s, and because of World War II, there's some strong feelings about Germans. So anyway, I thought I would just read a little bit about it. One thing this kid loves to do is he just kind of makes up stories. People will say, well, where are you going? And then he comes out with quite a long string. So he's early on, he's sitting in this bus, and there's a sort of overbearing group of women. And so he says, whatever got into me, one thing all too quickly led to another, as the woman clucked in concern and expressed, that's a long way to go by yourself. I'd be such a bundle of nerves. Sizing me up in a way I would come to recognize as if I were either a very brave boy or a very ignorant one, she persisted. What takes you so awful far? Oh, my daddy works there. Isn't that interesting? And what does he do? Where is it? Pleasantville? He's made up the town. It's funny about imagination, how it can add to your peril even while it momentarily comes to your rescue. I had to scramble to furnish. Yeah, well, He's a digester. You don't say. Wait till I tell the girls about this. Well, what he's talking about, he says, actually, maybe I should have, but I couldn't let go of my own imaginative version of the digestive process. It's books. He does that too at the Reader's Digest place. And so anyway, it's just a charming story. And the nice thing about it is Ivan sort of ties it up very nicely. And I kind of like happy endings. I don't know about you.
I do too.
Okay. Well, what else do you have in your book bag that you'd like to share?
Yes. Well, sort of fitting in with maybe the Montana theme, I also wanted to talk about a book by Pamela Houston. She has a book of essays called Cowboys Are My Weakness.
Oh, yes.
And I just love that book so much. I love how she writes about living in Montana and in Utah and working on ranches and going on river trips. And she just has a really honest voice. And I was living in Jackson Hole, Wyoming before I moved up here. So It's nice to read about sort of parts of the world that you're living in.
Right, right. So she was from that area, or she is from kind of that Montana area?
I think she's originally from the Midwest, but then just ended up sort of in the Mountain West area. I know she bought a ranch maybe in Utah, I want to say, and she like got the ranch for, she gave the man like one of her manuscripts, and he like gave her the land, like just something, an amazing story, like a manuscript and like $100 or something. And so anyway, she just writes, she has really lovely writing style, and I really like it.
So how did you end up reading essays? I mean, was that something that as a young person in high school would you have read essays, or is it a more newly acquired taste?
I feel like maybe I picked it up in the past few years. I really do love reading, but I can't necessarily let myself get into a big book if I don't have the time to read it, because then I just won't stop reading it. And so I do find essays are sort of convenient, and you can pick it up. And I, like, for example, Bad Feminist, you know, I've read probably like 75% of it, and I have a few more essays to read, but I'm excited that I still have them to read.
Right, right. And so I'm always curious when people will have a preference for fiction versus nonfiction. What, you know, how has that come to be? Is that because you're a journalist, do you think?
Yeah, I do think partly that has something to do with it, because I love reading newspaper stories and articles, and also just true stories. Memoirs are, I think, really, really interesting. I want to hear how other people live their lives. But not always. Also, you know, I just read a wonderful book, actually, called The Museum of Extraordinary Things. It's by Alice Hoffman. And that is like historical fiction, very fanciful and whimsical. And I just loved that.
What was it a little bit? I'm going to just jump in. What was it about?
Sure. It's about, it's a novel about this man who has this museum on Coney Island with like sort of like a freak show, you know, like the bearded lady and like midgets and stuff. And he also, his daughter is the mermaid. She's like the human mermaid exhibit. And he teaches her how to hold her breath for a really long time underwater by swimming the channel. But then they think that it's like the Loch Ness Monster sort of outside of New York, and sort of craziness ensues. And there's also sort of labor struggles during that time. And then some big fires that happened at different factories because of the labor. So that comes into it. But it was really well written and really magical.
Oh, very fun. So Alice Hoffman. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, do you have anything else in your book bag you'd like to talk about?
I do. Oh, actually, perfect. I wasn't planning on talking about Alice Hoffman.
No, that's fun.
She digresses from my essay theme. Also, Elizabeth Gilbert is one of my favorite writers. She's best known for Eat, Pray, Love, which is sort of a controversial book. I personally loved it. Others thought maybe she was too whiny or sort of entitled. But I think that's part of memoirs. You know, it's someone's story.
So what was, oh, so that was a memoir. And yeah. Did people feel it was self-indulgent or?
Yeah. And so she gets a divorce like in her 40s and then travels the world, and she wrote a book about it. And she does acknowledge that in her book, like not every woman who gets divorced can afford to travel to Bali and Italy and live this amazing life. And I think it's sort of unfair to judge her on that because she's just telling her story. And a lot of people have really embraced it. And then some people were just like, oh, she's just...
poor thing.
Yeah. Which I guess, you know, I understand. But before Eat, Pray, Love became sort of a wildly popular book, she was a journalist, actually. She wrote a bunch of different articles for magazines. And she has a collection of essays. It's all fiction. And it's called Pilgrims.
It's fiction.
And it, she just has little slices of life. She also sort of worked on a ranch in the West, and she writes about that. And she writes about like immigrants in New York and like magic tricks. And it's a really nice collection of stories about humans.
Now that's interesting. So they're kind of more of a short story than an essay, maybe?
Yeah, they're short stories.
Okay. Yeah. Sounds good. Did you bring anything else from your book bag? Would you like to talk about?
I think that was it, but it looks like you have another.
Well, I
book.
Do. And while I'm talking about that, I always kind of I like to ask people about you know a favorite book of all time. Maybe not. Maybe that's too. You know, too specific, because I guess what I would say is there are certain books that have stayed with me most of my life. And if someone says, well, you know, what would be a really promising book to read? And I can usually come up with a title. Now, maybe a different title next week.
Yes.
So think about that. This is a book. I love reading about adventures. And this was called... Oh, that's interesting because it's, what do they actually call this? Okay, so it's Rowing After the White Whale, which is a reference to Moby Dick. And then I guess the subtitle is A Crossing of the Indian Ocean by Hand. And it's by James Adair, but he had a partner in this effort. And what was fascinating about it was... they decide that they want to row across an ocean. And I think initially it was going to be the Pacific Ocean because that's such a big ocean. But in the end, they decided to row across the Indian Ocean. And they left Australia and were headed towards the coast of Africa, well, actually an island, before getting to Madagascar. So these two guys... they'd been good buddies for a long time, and they tended to have a fairly sarcastic sense of humor. But one of them had a disease that, and I can't come up with the name right off the top of my head, but it's one where you essentially become paralyzed, but it happens sort of slowly. And he even lost the ability, I think, to see. I think his eye muscles were paralyzed, and I think he could smell, and I don't think he could talk. And then gradually, Guillain Barre, I think that might be the disease. And then gradually, it subsides; the paralysis sort of goes away. Except oftentimes, there's lasting damage. And in the case of the author James Adair, he couldn't really feel his feet, and he had made a sort of a habit of really throwing himself into big challenges. And so when one of his professors said, you know, are you doing this because you have something to prove? And he said, yeah, you know, I think it probably is because I have something to prove. And so throughout this, it's a pretty amazing journey. And it's not a rowboat like you and I would necessarily think of it. It has enclosed, sort of small enclosed cabin. But they were doing this unassisted. They had to take enough food to last. They had to take a water maker, which periodically went down. And they had never rowed before. And they're going to row across this ocean. So I thought I might select a passage. I have a couple selected here. So let's see what looks good. Well, and they had a satellite phone, which broke. And they were pretty amazing. So he said, let's see. Okay, they had had some storms, and then they had also become somewhat becalmed. So they said later, back on board, we had a wash, and they had gone, they had left the boat because they were becalmed and swam around it and tried to scrape the bottom. So it said we had a wash and then lay down, one on either gunwale, drifting in and out of sleep in the warm afternoon sun. Later, we had a call from a family friend of mine, an experienced sailor who had given us lots of help before we set off. He had seen from the tracking that we had slowed to a halt and wanted to know if everything was okay. Absolutely, I said, couldn't be better. He had spoken to the Met office and the forecast was good. It sounded like we'd be surfing again in a couple of days. We decided to take the night off to rest our bodies and prepare mentally for the next weather system. Anyway, we said to each other, we're not trying to break any records. We're just here for the experience and we feel like taking a night off. Having justified ourselves, we decided on a feast for dinner. No freeze-dried food. Instead, we would eat some of the treats we had packed. Under a setting sun, we tucked into pork scratchings, tins of tuna, pineapple chunks, and two chocolate bars each for dessert. This simple fare tasted exquisite after all the freeze-dried foods. The textures of each component were subtle and pleasing, and it was as if our bodies were begging for what they offered in oil and fat and freshness. That night, we rearranged the cabin so we could both sleep at the same time, opting to top and tail, as opposed to the more intimate spooning we had unwisely attempted during the violent seas of the vortex. Then we slept a deep, long sleep like hibernating bears. By the time we woke up in the morning, our salt sores had greatly improved, and we felt like different people. One unbroken sleep had made us feel like new. And what they found was that it was very difficult ever to get sort of dry. And of course, because they were rowing, they were sitting on their rear ends, you know, doing some pretty hefty work, which meant that their hands would often sort of freeze into something they called the claw. And, but they made it. And however, I mean, obviously they made it, but on the last day when they're trying to get in through a reef, you know, because the currents were pushing them, they realized they had to get in. And it was an incredible experience. They got tossed out of their boat. They ended up having to get to the coral reef, which was ripping their hands apart and their feet. But needless to say, they did survive. But it's a great story, you know, and they're interesting characters. Well, we're about down to the last 2 minutes, and I just wonder if you had a title that you wanted to share.
Yes, Sarah, I just wanted to say you're such a good reader. Oh. I was captivated.
Oh, well, thank you.
I was thinking that one of the best books I've ever read was The Devil in the White City. I think it's Eric Larson is the author.
Yes, I think you're right.
So good. Nonfiction, enchanting. I couldn't put it down.
And briefly, that's sort of about a serial killer, isn't it? During the World's Fair or something?
That's right. Chicago's World Fair, I think 1892. And it sort of weaves like the story of like the architecture and the sort of that city with this serial killer. It's just fascinating.
Great story. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to sum this up by having you repeat the titles that you mentioned.
Yes. Bad Feminist by Roxane Gay and Find the Good by Heather Lundy. Cowboys Are My Weakness by Pamela Houston and Pilgrims by Elizabeth Gilbert. I also talked about The Museum of Extraordinary Things by Alice Hoffman.
Great. And I talked about Rowing After the White Whale, A Crossing of the Indian Ocean by Hand by James Adair, and also Last Bus to Wisdom, a novel by Ivan Doig. And Wisdom, by the way, is the name of a town, but he also gained a lot on this trip. So you've been listening to The Library Show on KCAW Raven Radio right here in Sitka. Come back and join us next week.